It's time for Twig This Week in Google, and it's like the old gang's back together. Jeff Jarvis, Gina Trapani, and Matt Cutts will talk about the latest news from Twitter, Facebook, Google, and a whole lot more. Stay tuned. This Week in Google is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twig.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly, CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 323, recorded Wednesday, October 21st, 2015. 8 feet of scrolling. This Week in Google is brought to you by Lynda.com, the online learning platform. With over 3,000 on-demand video courses to help you strengthen your business, technology, and creative skills. For a free 10-day trial, visit lynda.com/twig. That's lynda.com/twig. And by FreshBooks, the super simple cloud accounting software that's giving thousands of freelancers and small businesses the tools to save time billing and get paid faster. Try it free at freshbooks.com/twig. And by the Ring Video Doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your home. Right now, get free FedEx shipping when you go to ring.com/twig. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we talk about the Googleverse. Jeff Jarvis is in London, England. It's late at night. He's in his hotel. Hello, Jeff.
Hey.
Looks like quite a comfy hotel.
It's the airport hotel. I have a flight tomorrow morning to Mexico City.
You are in the week from hell, aren't you?
I'm in a month from hell.
So the first stop was London. What were you doing there?
Quantcast.
Oh, fun.
Which was really a lot of fun. Then I had a meeting. Then I ate the dinner at the Frontline Club, a journalist club. That's good. Tomorrow I fly to Mexico City via Houston for WAN-IFR, World Association of Newspapers. Next week, it's Berlin for News Exchange. The week after that is Lagos, Johannesburg, Miami. And the week after that, it's Phoenix for News Guys.
Holy cow.
What?
Wait a minute. That sounds like Gina Trapani. I must just be hallucinating. Oh, my God, it is. Oh, my God, it is. Hi, Gina.
Today, I traveled from my bedroom to my home office. And I did make it to the bodega for a coffee. So it's been a lot of traveling for me. How are you?
Great to see you. Thank you so much.
Did you get frequent Brooklyn miles?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I put on a few steps in Google Fit. That's about it.
And that's not to be knocked. That's
not at all. It all counts.
I'm on my Android Wear watch today. I have, in honor of Back to the Future Day, I have a flux capacitor. It even has a little Dymo ribbon that says "Shield eyes from light," and I think you can. I think you can set it to travel through time. Isn't that sweet?
Very nice.
Yeah, it is Back to the Future Day, and we're so pleased to welcome Matt Cutts to the table.
Yay!
Hey, missed you too. Are you still home, Matt? You still at home?
I am calling from Omaha this week.
What? Nebraska?
Yeah.
Huh? Is this for family?
That's where the in-laws are. Where the in-laws are located,
I think they have better connectivity than you do, Matt.
Wouldn't that be ironic?
Very clear.
I'm like, can we get Google Fiber in the Midwest just out of curiosity?
Man. Well,
I'll send you an address.
We were talking before the show about the new Nexus phones, and I guess 5X and 6P went out for review to select reviewers across the country. Our own Jason Howell got a review unit. He's working on the 6P review for Before You Buy this week. And I just thought I brought in my old Nexus 6 just to kind of compare and contrast. So the Nexus 6 is bigger, obviously, 6-inch screen. This is a 5.7-inch screen. But I think in many respects, I mean, this is a plastic back. Shamu, we loved you, but I think the time has come to take a look at the next generation of Nexus. And boy, I can't wait to hear your review, Jason, but I'm just impressed as heck.
Any previews, Jason? What are you thinking so far?
I'm really, really liking the device. No surprise. I mean, the design of the device with kind of the aluminum body and everything just feels beautiful. Really nice.
It's heavy, but that's okay. It gives a sense of quality.
Yeah, exactly. I don't mind a little bit of weight because it makes me feel, at least in my brain, it makes me feel like it's got a solid build and right. it's not hollow right. and empty. Right. The bump, the camera bump at the top that everybody freaked out about, not nearly as pronounced as you might fear, although it might still bug some people. I don't know.
It's there.
It's there. It's not
and
like
it's ironic not. Because you don't. This whole right side is unnecessary. The camera and the flash and the sensor on the left. Really, there's stuff over here.
They packed that full of stuff.
Oh, there is stuff.
Yeah.
There might be antennas in there.
Yep.
I think.
Antennas. That's where pretty much all the antennas reside, as well as the camera.
Because there's a plastic bottom here.
These are all the focus and everything.
You know, there's other places where the antenna can leak out, but okay.
Yeah, they put it all up there in that little window.
Stereo speakers, like that.
The speakers sound great, especially compared to the Nexus 6. My car stereo is broken right now, so if I want to listen to anything, it's through the speakers on full blast.
Really?
So I've actually really noticed a difference between the two. It's
really?
Not something I normally spend a lot of time with, and I have on this
well,
time around.
Let's play some music through here. I do love front-facing speakers. I think those are... Oh, it's got an ad. But that's all right. I'm going to turn it all the way up. That's dun, one dun, thing that's dun, changed. Dun, 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 dun. Skip ad. You don't mind. Lil Wayne. How about Lil Wayne?
Did you just start I'm feeling lucky or something?
Well, it sounds good. I mean, it's not super bassy, obviously. But
yeah, you're not going to get bass out of any of these speakers necessarily. But
okay.
Blah 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 blah.
I'm feeling unlucky now.
I will say,
worried about that.
Fingerprint sensor is really really
is
nice.
It's on the back.
It's so fast. It's
some people
so
have said,
fast.
Oh, the only problem with having it on the back is then that's enough. Thank you. Oh, Trap Queen, I like that. Is that you can't use it on the on the front? But big deal. I mean, I don't think that's a big deal. I mean, you can also do the thing which I always do, where if it's at a trusted location or tied to a trusted Bluetooth device,
yes.
It doesn't lock at all.
Mm-hmm.
So presumably, if it's in your office, sitting on a desk or whatever, you're not going to be locked in.
With all of those extra security features that you can activate in Lollipop and Marshmallow. What I've realized is I don't enter my PIN anymore because the fingerprint is sufficient,
right.
And I don't always have to use my fingerprint because I've got all the other things active, right? So depends on how comfortable you feel.
I have it in my on the vent on the car because the Waze is my means of getting around, and I just fear having to take it off and put my finger on.
Yeah.
Right.
That's so true. Although
you tie
if you,
it to your car's Bluetooth, yep, and you
exactly.
say that that's a trusted Bluetooth.
Oh, car's what?
Oh, never
My
mind.
Car's
that's
what?
Right. You don't have.
Do you have a watch?
if it works with steam-powered engines, it might be okay. But
yeah,
I have a watch.
Well, there you go. Sync it to your watch, and then if it's
because don't
near
forget,
you...
I've been waiting to get a car with Android
right.
Auto.
Right.
Yeah.
I can't get any straight answers out of Audi about when the heck it's coming on the car I want.
So you'll probably put a case on it. So slipperiness is not really a big issue, I don't think.
Yeah, I spent a day without the case, and the whole time I was afraid.
Yeah, it feels slippery.
Really?
It feels very slick on the back here.
Yeah, so I put that case on this morning, and I actually really like the case a lot, but it makes me feel at least a little bit more comfortable that I'm not going to do what I did to my Nexus 6 with this.
Is it one of the ones they sell on
yeah.
the site?
Yeah, it is. It's actually, it was part of the review unit package is what's on
it. Yeah,
right
yeah this is clear. See, it says Nexus. This is clearly a Google.
It's really nice.
Case.
Feels really nice.
How about storage? Enough, you think? This is a 64 this, gig phone.
Yeah, well, this one's the 16. The review unit, I believe, is the 16. So what is it, 16?
No, I don't think so. It says 12.2 gigabytes used of 53.67.
Oh, so it's the 64.
This
sorry.
This is the 64, yeah.
Okay, so it's 32, 64, and 128. You don't have a micro SD, so it depends on how much you're storing on the device. I think 64 is perfectly sufficient for me.
Absolutely, yeah.
But you have a 128 option if you really need to go big.
Main thing I care about, battery life.
Battery. So here's where I have a disclaimer. I was going to be reviewing this week. I'm not now because this device is faulty, actually. There was something going on yesterday where my battery was going really wacko. When I reboot it, it gives me, before the Google logo, it gives me this big red asterisk, and it says, your device is corrupt.
Oh, that's the boot protection.
Yeah, exactly. There's something weird going on with it. I contacted Google PR. They're sending me a replacement device, so my review is going to be next week. I don't want to place any judgments on this device for things like battery.
Story. I'm
likely
just going to say.
Story. This way, Leo gets to play with one.
7 a.m. You took it off just before 7 a.m. You still have 60% left. They think you're going to get past midnight.
I think that's pretty reasonable.
That's all I would ask if I could just get through the day.
Yesterday, I took it off at 7, and by 3, it was like 13%.
But that, again, yours was wonky. Right?
Yes, exactly. That's what I mean. Like, I was like, okay, that doesn't sound right compared to what I've heard from people. So I'm going to get a new unit and do
it. And you've been using this one or not?
Yeah, I've been using that one.
So this is, you know, that's decent slope. That's decent.
I would say so. And, you know, it has the fast charge capability, so you can charge it up super quick.
Yeah, like Type C. So Matt Cutts is getting the 6P, not the 5X, right?
I ordered the 5X, and now I'm like, maybe I'll order the 6P and decide whether which one, or maybe I'll just have a house phone, you know, and then one for going out, you know.
That's one way to solve the battery problem.
Yeah.
I have my evening phone. I think the battery life I've been hearing from reviews on the 5X is not so hot.
It's okay.
Yeah, so I think 5X. That you want, and you know what, this doesn't, boy, especially compared to Shamu, this doesn't feel that big. This
no, you know what, it's a little narrower, but it's a little taller. And I think between the two, I think that's the better way to go. The Nexus 6 just felt too unwieldy when you're doing one-handed operation. Yeah. And the 6P, I mean, that small change in narrowness actually makes a huge difference.
I can't wait. Mm-hmm. I think this is going to be my go-to phone.
For a month.
And the camera, for a month. Hey, that's all you can expect.
Hey, we know you well, Leo.
That's my life.
Yep.
That's a long time in Leo.
Yeah.
It's true.
A month. Oh, my God. That's incredible. Well, the iPhone. I've been using the iPhone 6S Plus, which I really like. And battery life on that is amazing. But if I can get through the day, that's all I need. Yeah. That's all I care about.
Agreed.
It feels really premium.
Yeah, really it really does. It's nice. The screen is fantastic. It's
good screen, yeah.
You know, it's a Samsung panel. The latest basically Samsung panel. So right on par with what you get in the Note 5, and everything pops. It's nice.
Nice, and it feels fairly swift. But is this the replacement or is this?
No, this is still the faulty.
So it's still maybe messed up. Huh?
So keep that in mind.
Yeah. Oops, can't capture this. Sorry, I got to do the lens blur thing. All right. Slowly raise your device. Keep subject. All right.
There you go.
Now, I can change the focus to here or to there. I don't know. I guess not.
I think you've got a little.
It's still processing.
Yeah.
Nice.
Now, we don't have the 5X in studio, but Gina.
Do you have? What?
Oh. Yeah.
So you went with the little one.
I did. I went with the little one. I've had this thing for 3 hours.
Oh, okay.
So
all right, give us a full review, top to bottom. We want no details.
I love it so far. This is my first experience with the fingerprint sensor. So, you know, unlocking the phone, that's one thing. That's going to be nice. But for me, it's LastPass.
Yeah.
Yep. I am always typing in my super long LastPass password.
Yep.
Just being able to tap my fingerprint, oh, so much better. I also had the first time experienced the thing where you like take your old phone and you tap it to your new phone, and it's just like bloop, and it just sets up your new phone with everything. That is amazing. Have you guys done that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's actually one of the winning features of Android, I think.
And something you don't get with the OnePlus 2 because they left out NFC, right? So
right, yeah, that was really nice. I have had weightier phones. This feels kind of light and plasticky to me, and I'm kind of like
it is
Jason.
Really light.
You
know? Yeah,
it's like the car door thing, right? They try to like add weight to car doors because people perceive that the car is a higher quality if the door's a little heavy and it has that like chunk when you close it. Same deal with phones for me. So it feels a little bit flimsy because I'm just used to a giant phone, but I'm really happy to have a one-handed device, and I don't know. I'm interested to see how battery life is. Like I said, I just charged it. It arrived today, and I just charged it a couple hours ago, so I'm still kind of finding my way around.
So I'm playing with the blur thing. So I'm making that in focus. Now I'm going to make this in focus. It's pretty fast.
Ooh.
Yeah,
nice.
I feel like this is Because that's a...
Now, that's built into...
That's in the camera.
Photos?
Yeah,
it's, oh, it's in the camera.
It's one of the camera settings. So the camera is very simple, but I like that. I don't mind that. You get a timer, you get an HDR, it's an auto by default, you get flash, you get a menu here that gives you photosphere, panorama, lens blur, you get a larger setting, but it's a very simple camera. Video choices, UHD 4K, HD 1080p, HD 720p, and you can also do slow-mo, right?
Yep. I haven't tested that yet, actually. Yeah. I forgot
video
about that.
Stabilization built in. This is nice. Nice. No. And I like the way you get to video on this, by the way. You just swipe it, swipe right, right?
Yeah. Left to right, or the other way to switch modes.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I heard one complaint was that with a double tap of the power button to turn on the
Yeah, that's kind of weird, isn't it?
Because it locks it, and then it opens it up in camera, but now you've locked the phone. Is that true?
Well, let's see. Actually, I can't tell because this phone doesn't have a lock. I mean, you're in camera. What more do you want? And with a fingerprint reader, it unlocks pretty darn quick.
Yeah.
I wouldn't worry about
then
that.
It is locked again.
Yeah. Lack of OIS is an issue, but...
Yeah, I would agree. And Google had explained, they had a Reddit AMA a few weeks back, and they had explained that basically the larger pixel size helps to improve that. But
that's what HTC said with a one, right?
Yeah, I just feel like no matter what, you get more stable images with OIS. So that is a loss.
But I did order a new SIM because if you're a Google Fi user, you have to get the new SIM to use with the new phones.
Really?
Yeah. They warned me about that.
If you want to, I think if you stay with the Nexus 6, you're fine. But if you want to go with the 6P or the 5X, then they'd like you to have a new SIM. Yeah.
Are these your pictures, Jason?
So this is a slow-mo of... a hummingbird shot with a 6P.
Whoa. Is this yours?
No, this is not mine. Oh. This was a demo footage released before the devices hit anyone's hands.
Holy
Isn't that cool?
Wow.
That is really cool. Holy moly.
That's I love Matt's Google cackle. Damn, we're smart.
Dang, we're good.
So Jeff... if it makes you feel better, I also ordered a ludicrous speed Chromebook Pixel this week because I'm like, I don't want any more lag when I'm on this week on Google. I want to
thank you.
I got to refresh everything.
Thank you.
So
we love that. I love that Chromebook Pixel. I really do. That's an awesome, awesome device.
Yeah, and I got the ludicrous speed. And I can't wait for my Pixel C, but I can't order it yet.
Yeah. Soon. Oh. Right.
Soon.
Sooner or later. All right, let's get to the news of the week. Jack Dorsey, the new CEO of Twitter, apologizes to developers and says he wants to reset relations. This is what, maybe too late, since it was a while ago when under Dick Costolo, the third-party developers were bumped. Here's a perfect example.
What was it? Was it fully under Dick, or did it start beforehand?
No, I thought it was beforehand too. Nick Bilton was here. He said, "No, it was all Dick."
It was okay.
Yeah. Well, but then it says here Dorsey's decision to dial back that relationship. Oh no, this is his current decision. All right. Going forward, the company says it will improve its communications with developers. "Quote: We want to make sure." We have a great relationship with our developers, an open and honest relationship with developers. It's not about relationship. It's about APIs. It's about access.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who cares about the relationship? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Gina's a developer.
Gina's also a very forgiving, nice person. She never slammed them.
You didn't. Did you feel? But ThinkUp wasn't a third-party app. That's really who got screwed, right?
It was not a client app. So my co-founder, Anil, who actually client Jack app, quoted yeah. during his intro today, which was crazy, called the Matrix of Doom. Do you remember the Matrix where it's like client apps are not allowed, right? But everything else, right? So we were in an allowed quadrant
right.
because ThinkUp was an analytics app, which in fact Twitter made quite a few announcements today that are huge for us. I mean, they're making all kinds of new insight data available to developers. So I'm really interested to dive into that. But, I think that Twitter really did screw up at that time. I mean, whether or not client developers were the biggest slice of the developer pie for Twitter, they were at least the very most vocal. And people love, you know, individuals love their power Twitter clients. And the fact that there were great clients out there that were getting killed because they couldn't give out a number of tokens was awful. And it made people listen. Hey, when Anil and I were going around pitching investors on ThinkUp, you know, we were getting, are you sure you're going to build against the Twitter API? What if Twitter decides to pull a rug out from under you? I mean, these are the questions we were getting from investors. So Twitter screwed up their relationship with investors. And I think that I was impressed that Jack started out with that statement today. I'd like to see him say, client developers, go crazy. Mm-hmm. We screwed up. You know, I'd like to see them, you know, offer more in their REST API. I mean, ThinkUp and a lot of apps use their kind of plain old REST API. They're really committed to Fabric and their mobile SDKs, and they announced a lot of cool stuff today. But now I'm interested to see, like you said, Leo, I'd like to see the access to the APIs change, not just the words.
But yeah. Isn't it also just it's about assurances? I have the same exact discussion, of course, with news organizations and Facebook and to some extent Google, and there's no forever. But you need some assurance over time that we're doing this, we know you're going to build on it. We know you're going to use it, and we're not going to screw you. That's really what matters.
Yeah. No, it's true. It's true. And, you know, I have kind of defended Twitter in the past because, I mean, I think out of all the big companies, Twitter set an example very early on with their super easy API tools as a great API. I mean, developers love Twitter and would, you know, could build, you know, with one curl command at the command line, you know, get back a JSON or an XML payload, you know, very early on. I think a lot of people cut their teeth on the Twitter API, developing web services through APIs because of Twitter. And, you know, when companies like Facebook, you know, change their API and kill access to various bits of data, which they do a lot, you know, for privacy reasons or whatever, no one really blinks an eye because I think people just kind of expect Facebook to be jerks. But because Twitter was so beloved in the developer community, I think they felt a deep sense of betrayal when the Matrix of Doom hit. So I don't know. I'd like to see Twitter to try to repair that relationship.
You know, just removing token limits would probably be a great start.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, that 10,000 token limit. I mean, no one in their right mind is building, you know, or innovating on a good Twitter client because you hit, I think it's 10,000, right? I mean,
if you're a new, if you, I think it's 100,000 if you're grandfathered in, and yeah, something's less than that.
Imagine what Twitter could be today if they hadn't screwed up with the developers. Imagine what developers could have built with Twitter. It'd be awe-inspiring. I think there's a lost opportunity. That, you're right. May or may not come back, but at least I'm really happy that Jack's doing this.
But you could make the argument that it was because of this that they were able to monetize, right? That by getting rid of the third-party clients, they forced people to use Twitter's own app and their website where they could directly monetize, which is hard to do with a third-party client.
They cherry-picked the best ones and acquired them. And then shut down access, right, for new client developers. And yeah, their reasoning was, hey, there has to be an easy experience. People should be able to go to an app store and get the Twitter app. And I get that. I mean, Twitter was going through, it was a very different time in Twitter's history when that all happened. Twitter was just trying to reach, you know, regular people. I think that's less of an issue now.
It was 100,000 users. If you're a new Twitter application, you get 100,000 users and that's it. If you already had 100,000 users by the time they cut this off in 2012, you could get twice your current user base and then you're cut off. So if you were a third-party Twitter client, you could never do more than double. And there was no reason to do a new one because you could never have more than 100,000 users.
Well, that's a lot more reasonable than 10,000, which is what I said initially.
Yeah, but still, it was enough to end third-party Twitter client development, right? I mean, there are a few companies that were already in the business that have stayed in the business, but the rest of them.
And the other thing you could do is you could attach a business model to an API, right? You can say that. It could have cut both ways. It could have said Twitter demands these requirements for advertising in any client, but it also could have said, and you client makers can make money if you follow these rules. It could have helped build the business more, I think. And it could have made Twitter more embeddable in other places. You know, it's just it, it's That's what it. Twitter's culture was the hashtag and the at sign. We all know were not made by Twitter. They were made by outsiders, and that's so key to the cultural history of Twitter, and that's what they betrayed.
Yeah.
But again, if you're a developer at this point, I think it might be too late. There's plenty of other places you can develop for, right? Why take a chance? He did tweet. He wants to hear your ideas and requests using the hashtag Hello World. I don't know. It's an interesting choice.
He kicked off the flight today by saying that Hello World is obviously the thing that most people figure out how to output when they're first learning to program, and he feels like it really embodies what Twitter is because it's a global communications.
Hello.
So they went with Hello World. Nice and clever. And if you see some of the responses, they're great.
Yeah, they are.
It's going to be one hashtag that won't be spammed with porn.
Yeah, you could figure Twitter will get right on that. That's one thing.
Hello, world.
Yeah, in fact, if I were, well, never mind. if I were of an evil mindset. As long as we're in the Twitter, we'll move on and we'll get to Google in a moment because there's lots to talk about. But just a couple of other things. Twitter has introduced polls. Twitter polls. We heard rumors about this. If you want the public's opinion, by the way, G+ does this beautifully. Similarly, I might add. You can create
a poll. Only allow two choices, two responses.
That's it.
Yeah. And lasts for 24 hours.
Stupid.
Yes or no?
Two choices, 24 hours.
Oh, never mind. Never mind.
They're going to open that up. Two choices. That doesn't make much sense.
Well, it's like 140 characters.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's funny that, you know, they were like, people use, you know, favorite if you think this and retweet if you think that. And, you know, the polls are obviously a much more intuitive way to give an answer. But it just surprised me that it was only two choices. But, you know, that these things that we're talking about all go back to the big themes of openness versus control and simplicity versus choices. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe more than one choice is just too much for people to handle. I don't know.
I think two choices. I understand. It's like 140 characters. It's an arbitrary limit. But I think it makes it very easy to very quickly go, oh, yes, no, yes, no,
yeah,
yes,
that
no.
One.
You don't have to think about it. So I think that isn't so bad. I mean, they're trying to create a platform that pollsters will use to choose between the Republican candidates. You need like
a ton of
choices.
About as nuanced as our TV coverage is. So.
Yeah, yes or no. It's basically, will Trump win? Yes or no? All right.
I mean, it also seems like a great way to gather more, you know, data points about what your users like and don't like, and so you can advertise to them more effectively.
Should I see this movie or that movie? That's the kind of stuff it'll be used
for. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's not the magic eight ball. It's a yes or no. Do not kick refugees is the moral of this story.
Yeah.
Did she kick him or just trip him? I don't know.
Caused to fall.
Why would she do that? Anyway, she's facing trial in December.
She got fired.
And now she's suing Facebook. She's a Hungarian camera woman for N1 TV. She's going to sue for facilitating an online campaign against her. Facebook played a major role in my situation, she said, and helped embitter people against me.
I was loving it.
Everybody else was happy, right? The Petra Laszlo shame wall currently has about 10,000 likes.
It's called that? The shame wall? So wait, did she trip this person on purpose?
No one really knows. She claimed the Syrian refugee was tripped by Laszlo, had changed his testimony. One of the policemen tripped my son, but it wasn't as bad as the camera woman, he told the Daily Mail after the incident. He fell onto the ground. The seven-year-old. So his seven-year-old was tripped by policemen, and then he was carrying him, and then the camera woman trips him, and he falls on her. She says she's considering moving to Russia. She has no future in Hungary. But one thing we know for sure, we will sue Facebook, and we will also prove that the refugee was wrong. I don't know. There's video. I don't know.
I'm trying to catch the trip here. It's hard to.
Well, the angle's bad. We'll watch it again.
Oh, yeah, her leg.
See, there she is on the right here. Okay. And here comes Osama. And whoops.
Yeah.
Are you kidding? Her leg goes, look at that. Yeah.
But why? But why would she do that? So she'd get a good shot of him falling?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
And she kicks.
Oh, she kicks somebody.
Yeah.
Okay. There you go. She's just a jerk. She did a karate kick. Oh, my God. She kicked that little girl. Oh, my goodness. Okay. Well, video, you know, you need to sue the guy who invented video cameras because that's really who got you in trouble there. Let's take a break. We're going to talk about YouTube Red. I don't know what it means for me or anybody, but I'm sure our panel will figure it out. A membership version of YouTube. Matt Cutts is here. He's some guy. You may remember him from the webmaster videos on YouTube's, Google's webmaster tools. And he's currently enjoying life as a civilian. We don't really know much more than that. MattCutts.com/blog if you want to read more.
I like the idea that otherwise Matt would be wearing a Google uniform.
Yeah, yeah. He's out of uniform right now.
Right, yes.
not wearing his beanie.
I imagine multicolored, primary colored epaulettes.
Actually, I want to ask you about Omid Karmaskordistani, actually, but we'll get to that too. Yeah, I'm sure you know him well. And also, that's Jeff Jarvis. He's in London, and he's about to fly to Mexico City. But he's paused in his flight to join us. I'll promise not to trip you. Although it's tempting if you do run out of here, I might. And Gina Trapani from Brooklyn.
Hello.
And the creator of not only ThinkUp, but now the new MakerBase, MakerBase.se. And
yes.
Great to have you.
Great to be here.
Great to have you. Our show today brought to you by a very good thing to know about if you're one of the people, and I think you are, who wants to learn, who wants to grow, who's curious, who likes to take classes to make things happen. I'm talking about lynda.com. Whether you want to develop an app, redesign your website, master Excel, learn a new programming language, or just get better at your hobby. I love photography, and I love lynda.com for photography, for Photoshop, for Lightroom. It's the best place to learn. Check out lynda.com. They just added two great courses for beginners. Lisa's taking the Introduction to Photography and Getting Started with Photography. These are taught by pro photographers. In fact, people, the best in the business, people I know, like Ben Long, there's Ben showing you how to get started with photography. I mean, this guy's a great photographer, but also a great educator. I mean, this is so cool. There's also a 5-day photo challenge, which I really love those challenges. It'll help you improve your eye, you know, plus new courses on color correction, making selective adjustments in Adobe Camera Raw. That's kind of a high-end topic. Lightroom, Creative Cloud Essential Training, the fundamentals of Photoshop. You start there, but man, they get deep. They get real deep. And when you're learning from people like how to use Photoshop from people like Burt Monroy, you're learning from the best. I love lynda.com. Over 3,000 on-demand courses, professionally shot. There's transcripts you can read and search. So you can quickly jump to the part of the course that you want, or you can just watch it beginning to end. That's the nice thing about Lynda. And I always say you don't have to declare a major, because with lynda.com, your membership gives you access to every video on the site. So you don't have to say, well, I want to do photography. Oh, no, maybe I'd want to do Excel. Maybe I want to learn to be a programmer. No, you can do it all. Lynda.com, unlimited access with your membership to training on hundreds of topics, one low flat rate. And for to give you a taste, for right now, 10 days free when you go to lynda.com/TWIG. Let's see what you're studying there. AutoCAD, After Effects, a little bit of coding, a little bit of photography. That's good. A nice mix of stuff. lynda.com/twig. And we thank them so much for their support of This Week in Google. So it's, I guess, official if you go to youtube.com/red. YouTube Red is here. $10 a month for a, quote, amplified video and music experience. The amplification, there's no ads. Watch. So we've had this with the Google Music Pass with no ads in our music videos, but now it's for everything. You can also save videos and songs on your mobile device to watch offline. You can play in the background while using other apps. And this is this for every video on YouTube, or does a company have to sign up for this? How does this work?
TechCrunch says if you don't sign up, your videos get hit.
Looks like it's going to be for every video.
And if I don't agree...
Yeah, it's going to be every video except stuff like pay-per-view.
Okay.
Yeah, because... so all the... It's like 99% of the content, and then the ones who haven't agreed... You know, they'll have to work that out. But it gets rid of all the ads, the pre-roll, mid-roll, banner ads, search ads, homepage banner ads, in-video text overlay ads, all that sort of stuff. But it doesn't take care of things like pay-per-view, paid channels, or movie rentals, which is
that makes sense.
Something that most people probably aren't doing.
Yeah, anymore. That makes sense. So basically, it's the YouTube you watch right now, but in an ad-free experience. Now, it's going to screw the hell out of us.
Yep.
I guess we'll have to leave YouTube because I can't. I mean, we don't make an ad-free version of our shows. All of our shows have ads. I just did an ad. That ad would be in our show, and I would guess they won't let me do that because that wouldn't be an ad-free experience. Do I get some of that $10? How
well, do they do say that you? The artists do get compensated, is my understanding, and they do say on the site you might see promotions or branding that the creator put in their video. So, you know, they're not going to say you won't see, you know, a van sneaker that somebody put into something. So it's possible that people who upload the video with something in the middle of it, you know, that still would carry through.
But, you know, Matt, the problem, the moral hazard there is that rather than doing what Leo Dish did, which is to very clearly label commercial, you'll just be sneaking in. Boy, you know, Jarvis, you know, you want to take a Linda course.
Right. I got to fool him now.
I've been thinking you're really ignorant. You're an ignorant idiot. And I think Linda might fix that in some areas, you know.
And then that's not an ad, is it? It does. It makes me want to do native content. Of course, I would never do that. So I'll just guess I'll wait and see. But it sounds like maybe all of our YouTube videos will be turned off as of October 28th.
The other weird thing is to me is if I were ad sales at YouTube, I'd be pretty upset because this basically says, okay, we know ads suck. This idea of the ad charging for the ad-free experience devalues the other half of the business so much that I'm not comfortable.
Yeah, you don't see – even with Hulu, you don't see NBC doing an ad-free experience. Even with Hulu Plus – they get ads. You don't want to imply that there's something wrong with ads, except that we know. Come on, everybody knows there's something wrong with ads. The question is how they divvy up the $10 a month. Is it going to be? Is PewDiePie going to get more than somebody else because he has more people watch? I presume they'll tie it to the number of views.
I thought it was a minutes viewed. So creators who have longer videos,
more minutes,
and people watch longer might get a better rate.
So we're going to start seeing longer videos?
Well, I thought what I saw in one of the TechCrunch
that's right.
pieces was you know, people who make shorts might make less if viewers don't stick around. But I think the key is getting viewers to stick around. Leo, didn't we talk about how you needed to take your ads out of your YouTube videos? Or
well, we were
point-
talking about how probably the last time you were here, and the email had gone out to YouTube partners with these terms that if you do not agree to these terms, then your videos will be hidden.
Okay.
And well, here's another question, Leo.
Yeah. Could I actually haven't. This is all new to me. I don't know what I'm going to do.
Well, here's the other question. So the thing is, most of the people would watch let's just say Twig for free with YouTube's ads and your ads and whatever. Are you allowed to put up two different versions of the same show?
No, because I could only put up an ad-free version, right?
Right, and then they either run YouTube's ads on them or...
Now, there's a bit of an antitrust issue there.
Because it says it's going to hide my videos not just from the ad-supported, not from just for the ad-free tier, but from the ad-supported tier.
So if people are using this distribution panel and others to do things that have advertising embedded in them, and they're making their own money at that, and this is a mechanism to get people to not be able to do that, and only Google can make money through ads or subscription.
Yeah, this
also has an impact on ads.
That's how I would interpret this. Is the only people who can sell and run ads on YouTube is Google, period. And if you want to be on YouTube, you best not have any ads that we didn't sell, right? I don't know. I don't know.
I mean, a friendlier interpretation could be just a way for YouTube video people who watch YouTube videos to not have to deal with YouTube ads, which involve the skip ad and the interruptions. You know, and that whatever your content is, other than that, it is. I don't know.
Matt, you were going to say something?
The only thing that I was going to say is just that I think you could still have things like pay-per-view and paid channels and things like that. So I think that would provide a way to monetize. But the other thing is, if there are different avenues to monetize the content, then, you know, people could make money from the ads, but then the artists could also be compensated from this subscription. And then that opens up ways where you can have, you know, more original content and more, you know, people who might be open to being compensated in different ways. So I think that could be one nice thing. The other angle that I haven't seen mentioned that much, which I don't think most people realize, is that this also goes pretty well with the Google Play Music subscription. So if you already subscribe to that, you'll get YouTube Red for free.
Oh.
And so if you're already paying your $10 a month,
really?
So that you can stream all the music you want, then you won't see ads in YouTube.
Oh,
yeah.
That's great.
And likewise, if you sign up for the $10 a month YouTube Red, then you also get a free subscription to the Google Play Music. And so I think a lot of people hadn't realized that, you know, you would have paid $10 a month anyway to be able to get free music. And now you can get free music and no ads in YouTube.
Wow, that's attractive.
Or, you know, the offline viewing and
yeah,
the ability to...
But boy, slice that baloney up.
That's kind of good.
Among all the usage of YouTube, I mean, you look at the kind of traffic PewDiePie has. It's hard to imagine you make as much in the ad-free version. But, you know, I don't know. We'll see. I'm sure they've been doing testing.
So would anyone here pay for – I think I might pay for this.
Well, I already pay for Google Music, so I guess I'll just keep that, so
you're,
right?
You're going to get it, yeah.
But that's kind of – it's an interesting issue because it's my impression that a lot of people watch PewDiePie are 12-year-olds, and I don't know if they'll have the $10 a month to pay for free PewDiePie. So what I think what this does is it favors channels that – and content that addresses older users. I'm sure YouTube has thought this through. PewDiePie will continue to be ad support. You know, everything PewDiePie is doing will continue because he'll say, yes, I agree to that. And if it's 90% of his users don't pay for it, they'll get the ads just like they always have. I mean, I look at my 12-year-old. He's not going to pay $10 a month. I'm not going to give him $10 a month to pay. So,
but I'll pay $10 a month so that my 4-year-old isn't seeing commercials.
Might.
You know, that I would definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, she doesn't watch TV because I don't want her to see commercials and YouTube. And she mostly watches YouTube and the commercials are just annoying. I mean, she sees commercials, you know, watching Sesame Street. She's seeing ads for like daycares and cleaning, you know, household cleansers. And, you know, she's 4. Like, I don't just need to see ads. So I would pay for that. So that there must be, I think there are probably scenarios with kids where you'd say, oh, okay. Yeah, I'd pay
for
that.
But I think, Leo, you're right. Story out this week is that PewDiePie makes $12 million
right.
in the last year. And if that went down some good proportion because some good proportion of the audience doesn't want the ad versions or pick somebody else.
Well, it shouldn't because presumably that the $10 a month will for ad-free stuff will replace the revenue he's lost for
that's the question. What's the per user revenue level for each? And again, Google has done
YouTube's figured it out, right?
Well, but there's more than one agenda here. One is revenue per revenue. You know, the other is hegemony on the advertising. You know, I don't know. We'll see.
And as far as Twit goes, I mean, I don't think we ever got the email, so I don't know what to do. But if we did, I guess we'll agree to it. But we can't remove our ads. We're not going to remove our ads. So it's kind of unclear in the FAQ. It kind of implies that in-line promotions are allowed. Is it something that's obviously an ad allowed? I don't know. Actually don't know. And, of course, there's nobody, you know, I don't know what will happen. So it is completely possible that 1 week from today, all of our content will disappear from YouTube. I don't know.
I'd be surprised by that, Leo. I mean, I'd be really surprised by that. No one's going to be like, I paid for YouTube Red and I had to hear Leo like read his commercial. Like it's very clear. The difference between YouTube ads and your ads seem very clear.
And it's not like I would lose a lot of money. We don't get a lot of views on YouTube anyway. Most of our revenue does not come from YouTube. Actually, none of our revenue comes from YouTube, I think. Very little.
That's the other thing.
So, hey, Glenn. did we get an email from YouTube? I don't know. So this is going to be interesting. It is not an accident that that Forbes had this article, by the way, this week on the world's highest paid YouTube stars, because of course this is perfectly timed with this YouTube Red announcement, and the message is clear. And I'm sure that these numbers are placed by YouTube. The message is clearly: look how rich you can get by being on YouTube. And it's in the face of competition from Facebook and Twitter and supposedly Yahoo, although I don't know if that's real competition.
Yeah. It's amazing numbers, 12 million.
Well,
bucks.
But it's a little confusing because it seems like they're not just this. They're including revenue from books and makeup and other stuff, not just YouTube revenue.
Oh,
so that's yeah.
Oh.
So if
the $8 million we quoted before could be the YouTube revenue.
Yeah. It's kind of, I mean, you should read this and tell me, because it implies that, so for instance, number four, Lindsay Sterling, the dancing violinist who's used YouTube to propel her to fame and $6 million in earnings over the 12 months to June, putting out two albums, a book deal, and a lucrative touring career. Is the $6 million coming only from YouTube? Or is that her revenue, including albums and touring? It's not clear way this is written.
Clear. Well, Michelle Phan is obviously. But here's the other thing. Michelle Phan makes a lot more than $3 million from her business.
I don't know either.
There's an article about YouTube stars, I realize how old I truly am.
Yeah, they're all very young, aren't they? Yeah.
Well, and I just don't know them. Like, I just don't know them very well. My nephew, PewDiePie, is like my nephew's hero, and I don't really get. Like, I get that he, like, plays video games and curses out people. I don't know. That's my impression.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
That's how I know I'm really old. So maybe you had a point earlier about how older people pay for stuff, because, you know, I watch Netflix and, you know, HBO Go and all that, but not so much up with the YouTube stars.
So here's the – maybe it is just revenue made in the YouTube videos, but it includes – products placement in the videos, I think, as well as ads sold by YouTube. It's not clear. It's a very unclearly written. I don't know. But the point is for somebody to read this and go, wow, I'm going to make a killing on YouTube.
Right.
And I've always felt bad about that a little bit, because I think there's so many people who get seduced. It's like saying, hey, you could be a basketball player in the NBA and make as much money as Shaq, and it's just about as likely.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not sure I'd go that far. I mean, there's also people who are saying, you know, learn how to make an app and you'll make billions of dollars. And it's like, well, some people do it, some people don't. And a lot of it depends on how much work you put into it, how creative you are, all that sort of stuff. So
I think it's a long shot. A really long shot. Clearly YouTube wants to imply that you could be the next one. So it's good to know that get this. I will be getting it then, because I'm a YouTube, I subscribe to Music All Access Pass. They don't call it that anymore, whatever they call it, the Google Music.
Just play music.
Yeah.
Play music.
I can subscribe to Play Music, so I'll get free. I won't have ads on my YouTube anymore. Is that right?
That's right. You'll also, if you're interested, there's a YouTube Music app. So it's not just the YouTube app, but a dedicated music app for YouTube that you'll be able to play around with as well. And so you can like look for different versions of songs and stuff like that. So that's a pretty neat experience.
They've been incorporating that in, which is I agree, is really awesome. Mm-hmm. Anyway, watch for it. Go ahead.
Leo, don't you think it's a little easier to become, you know, popular on YouTube than to get your own like TV show?
Oh, definitely.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, you may not make $12 million, but could you make $100,000? Could you make $25,000?
How many people do you think are making a living on YouTube?
More than there are NBA stars.
NBA stars, maybe, but I don't know. I think there are a lot of people make money living in TV. I think it's about the same, frankly, because it comes down to what's missing is the gatekeeper, right? So there's nobody saying, but I think the gatekeeper isn't really the bottleneck because you still have to be popular, right? So assuming that the gatekeeper does a decent job of keeping the unpopular people out and isn't blocking somebody who's potentially really great. I mean, I guess PewDiePie would never get on network television. That's obvious.
The gatekeeper and also the number of possible stars, right? Like there's only so many shows and so many hours.
There's a lot
day.
More stars on television than there are on YouTube.
Well, but this is a new medium.
Okay.
Mm. I think Matt's point is good. I think
I don't know if it's same with blogging. I don't know if I would say that's obvious.
You can make a living blogging. It's the wrong analysis to say how many are there. I think what Matt's saying is how hard or easy is it? If you want to devote yourself, and if you do something that's popular,
I disagree. That's the big one. Is if you do something popular, so it's not merely how hard you work; it's how people take to you.
Talent, luck, and concept, and production.
And I think that's similar in both media.
That happens.
The difference is the gatekeeper. But on the other hand, in more traditional forms of media, you have a lot more support. And I know that's why YouTube built the YouTube studios and all of that stuff. But really, you're not going it on your own.
The difference is the gatekeeper, but the difference is also when you can access a worldwide audience, you can aggregate enough of these small folks who are kind of weird that you can find a niche that is like something that would never work in a small town or on network television, you know, whether it's, you know, gadget bloggers or, you know, SEO or whatever. True. There's room now so that you can take all the Dungeons and Dragons fans or whatever and you can make your own little channel. Now, is that enough to live on and prosper and go big? I don't know, but at least that's an avenue that wasn't there before.
Oh, I absolutely wouldn't argue with the fact that you could find an audience. I'm only saying whether you can make a living because we hear, I mean, I look at Pomplamoose as a really good example. Jack and Natalie Dawn, I think, are very talented musicians. They've done a lot of YouTube videos. Jack said himself, when I had 1 million views on a video, I made $1,500. It cost me $6,000 to make the video. I realized this was not a model and he started Patreon. And I don't think that he's alone. So can you become popular on YouTube and build an audience? Absolutely. In a way that you cannot do in any other medium.
Mm.
Make a living? I think that's another matter entirely. I don't think YouTube, and this is something that I kind of blame YouTube for. I think YouTube, I guess my attitude is one of the things that I don't like about these articles is it feels to me a little bit like serfdom. I feel like it's a guy saying, yeah, come work on our farm. You could be rich. And in fact, what you're really doing is lining the pockets of YouTube and not really getting much of a chance to make any money for yourself in most cases. And when you highlight these 12 people who are making millions, you're really doing a disservice to young people who really want to make it in the business and are going to work their butts off and are going to learn several years down the road that that is not a way to make a living. They don't pay that much. The CPMs are very, very low. And the rich get richer on YouTube.
Well, you know, there's one guy who's learned how to make a living, and that's the 23-year-old Google employee who's living in a truck and saving 90% of his income. Did you see that story?
Yeah.
If I were 23 years old, I'd be like, wow.
Live maybe in a that's truck, such man. A bad idea. Live in a truck.
Sounds amazing.
The truck would have been kitted out a little nicer. You know, some more IKEA in it or something.
Yeah, he's what? Got a whole blog.
This is not the first story about. Of somebody who works at Google living in the parking lot.
No.
And Google's just the kind of place that people would just kind of shrug and be like, yeah, whatever. Right? I mean.
So we had this conversation about YouTube on Twit with Jason Calacanis, who, of course, wrote a scathing blog post in which he said, YouTube's a great place to promote yourself. It's a terrible place to make a bit to build a business. And I think that that's probably accurate that, you know, but I just worry about the young kids, because if you're a grown up and you're making I mean, I know what I'm doing on YouTube and I don't expect to make money on YouTube.
Well, Leo, it's another way around, too. I mean, I wrote a column in The Observer last week saying that with Instant Articles and AMP and all that kind of stuff, I'm saying to media companies, forget the kids, I'm saying to media companies that you should consider building a new media property, a new service to a community entirely on Facebook.
Well, I think that's what's going to happen. I think one of the reasons this YouTube Red is here is because Twitter, Facebook, and maybe Yahoo are all saying we want to build the next video platform, and we are going to be their come on is we're going to be more fair to the creators. And so this is, I think, a lot of what's going on right now behind the scenes is Twitter's into this, Facebook's into this, and and remember this whole we talked about it, this article by a YouTube creator who said, well, Facebook's got to stop lying if they're going to win people over. But that's the opportunity for these other companies to say to creators, I mean, you got to value the creators, obviously. We'll move on. That's fine. I think we covered all of the stories in that chunk. There. Let's take a break. And if you're seeing this on YouTube after October 28th, good news. Our show today brought to you. it doesn't matter to me, but I think it does matter to the fate of YouTube a little bit. Our show today brought to you by FreshBooks. Here's a pop quiz for freelancers. Make their living billing for time and expertise. What of these is your favorite part of freelancing? Formatting and sending invoices. Collecting receipts and tracking expenses. Following up with clients who don't pay you on time. Now I'm getting depressed. Or none of the above in any case ever once in a million years. Well, obviously it's none of the above. Because that's the hard part. Everything is great about being a freelancer. You get to do what you love. You get to work with great clients. But man, billing for expenses and sending out invoices and following up is just the worst. And so that's why FreshBooks is so important. If you're a freelancer or a small business, FreshBooks is a lifesaver. It was for me. It's a super simple cloud accounting program that's giving thousands of freelancers like you the tools to save time, bill, and get paid faster. Let me be clear. When I say program, it's completely web-based. So easy to use. You'll make great-looking professional invoices. You'll get paid faster. If people are slow to pay, that FreshBooks will automatically send out an extra email. You'll be creating those invoices in minutes and sending them out, watching your expenses organize themselves. Use the FreshBooks app on your smartphone or tablet, and boom, that expense goes right into the invoice. You're tracking your time. You're billing your hours. You're going to wonder why you didn't start doing this sooner. You've heard me talk about it before. Try it right now free for 30 days. FreshBooks.com/twig. Got any questions at all? Talk to the award-winning FreshBooks support rock stars. They will go over and above to help you get started and enjoy your FreshBooks experience. I never talked to them once. FreshBooks just worked right out of the box. I loved it. I used it for years. FreshBooks.com/twig. Don't forget to mention that you heard it on This Week in Google in the How Did You Hear About Us section. 30 days free right now. Really an amazing solution. FreshBooks.com/twig. Big victory for the Google. I think it's a victory. I think we can say a lasting victory in the Google Book Project. Scan books. A federal appeals court last Friday dismissed the lawsuit brought by the Authors Guild over the digital copying project. This has been going on for a decade. In 2005, the Authors Guild accused Google of massive copyright infringement in a federal lawsuit. Google had started scanning in books. They'd scanned in, or they have scanned in, 20 million books and reached an agreement eventually with the publishers. Actually, I think it was a court. Wasn't it a court-mandated agreement, Jeff?
I think so. It was back and forth so often. I can't remember who was on first.
And then the publisher said, okay, but the Authors Guild said, no freaking way. They went back to court. The second U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals says it's not infringement. They said this unanimously, by the way, because what the company makes viewable online is so limited. This was affirming a lower court ruling against the Authors Guild. Now, I guess the Authors Guild could go to the Supreme Court. There's no comment yet from the Authors Guild. But this is a pretty strong, I would say, victory. Now, I understand the Authors Guild point of view. They're afraid that Google's going to scan books in their entirety, and then the authors will never sell books. But that's not what ever happened. Google's using snippets, right?
Mm-hmm.
And also
being able to analyze it so that you can find things that you otherwise couldn't find through search. So it's not just what they display. It's also that because they've scanned them, now these works become more findable.
What is that called? What page is that? The insights page? It's got a funny name. I can't remember. Where you type in two words and it says how often.
Oh, the
Google Trends.
Trends? No.
No. This is the one where you since 1890, viewer. The word hack has been used like this.
Engram viewer.
Engrams.
Engram viewer. Engrams.
Thank you. That is so awesome. We've used it. We've had fun with it. Yeah. Books.google. It's part of the Google Books thing. Books.google.com/Engram, N-G-R-A-M. So, for instance, between 1800 and 2000, Albert Einstein, Sherlock Holmes, and Frankenstein.
Oh, that's so great.
The blue is Einstein. The red is Sherlock Holmes. Frankenstein's just taken off ever since the horror decade of the 60s, 50s and 60s. Who thought that up? That's weird. Search lots of books, says the button. But yeah, so it's things like that that's hugely valuable to society that does not impinge on an author's trademark. And a lot of the books in this, are, of course, are orphan works. They're in copyright technically, but nobody cares about them. And those orphan works are just lost to society without something like this. So I think this is great. Authors Guild has not yet responded. I guess they could and probably will appeal. Google now says they have 100 million MAUs in Google Photos. 100 million monthly active users. Wow.
Yeah.
That's in 5 months. No, it doesn't. I use it. It's awesome.
It's great. I use it almost every single day. It's great.
Top photographed locale? Paris, of course. Followed by New York. You're all foodies. Besides people, food is what you photograph the most. And they know this because they categorize it automatically. The events you photograph the most are weddings, followed by concerts, Christmas, dancing, birthdays, and clubs. Now, it's only been around for 5 months, so that may change, right? I mean, Halloween, right? People take more photos of dogs than any other animal.
That's them fighting words to cat fans.
I'm surprised. Yeah, I'm shocked. True. You drove cars to the number two spot in the list of things photographed. What?
I didn't understand that one.
You drove cars to the number two. Oh, cars are number two of the things photographed.
Really?
But what is number one?
Oh.
People?
Food?
Food? I don't know.
Food, I guess.
Paris, yeah. New York, Barcelona, the top photographed places.
Oh, that's just by
Barcelona,
sheer.
Barcelona, who would think?
Right?
I don't know. Babies are the top photo subject you searched for.
babies.
Yay.
And by the way, this page is great. It's public, and it's the official Google blog. And the good thing is what it really is giving you tips for, you know, search for pizza or try searching Halloween, pumpkins, and costumes. Costume. Try searching for breeds. It knows breeds?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Search for car types, truck, sedan, convertible. You can search for the Eiffel Tower. It says, we'd recognize it anywhere. We'll add it to your places even without a geotag. Mm-hmm. You can have a private name label with your baby's nickname so you can find pictures fast without giving away their secret identity. You created, now, I don't know if this is you or Google. I would say this is Google has created more than 15 million animations and collages. Because you don't do anything. It just does it for you. The assistant does it for you.
But you can also do it now.
Oh, okay. So maybe people have created 15 million.
Start by selecting photos, tapping the plus button, and select animation.
All right.
That's probably automatic, though.
I don't know.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's because I have more than 15 million GIFs in my library already. Just me.
Just me personally.
Well, if you do a lot of burst mode, you know, you'll get a lot of animations. I love that.
Yes.
I love Google Photos. We've freed up 3,270 terabytes of storage. So I think that's what they're saying is that's how much we're using. Is that 3.7 petabytes? No. What comes after terabyte? Petabyte, right?
Excellent. Okay, Google.
No, you can't do that anymore. This is the saddest thing in the world. You can't say, okay, Google, do your browser on your desktop anymore. That makes me cry.
I can because I have a Chromebook.
Oh, wait a minute. I still can, too.
Yeah, 3.7 petabytes.
Yeah. Petabytes. Wow. Yeah.
Yep.
Wow. That's a lot of petabytes.
Chicken feed.
Is it really? Do you know what the total storage Google uses?
It's a lot.
It's a lot. Many. 1, 2, 3, many.
That's just the amount of storage that has been freed up on people's phones from backing up to the cloud. So
just think about it.
There's
amazing. It's amazing.
There's no word for the volume of storage Google has.
No. I would love to know.
It's just big.
There'd be some great...
Well, there is a TED Talk. Randall Monroe from XKCD did a TED Talk where he tried to estimate the amount of storage that Google has. And it's actually really amusing to watch him go through the process, and then we know what the real answers are. And so we can hear where he got it right and where he got it wrong. I think they sent him like some reply that was like on a punch card or something like that. That was like, nice try or something like that.
I love it.
But, that's a pretty good TED Talk to watch if you can find it.
So I could still talk, but I have to click the mic. It's no longer, I can't just say, okay, Google to the, that's fine. I don't know why
they got rid of it.
They say nobody used it. It's a tech.
Yeah, I use it on my phone all the time. I don't use it on my computer.
Yeah.
Okay, Google. Did you hear that?
Sky, beaches, and mountains are in the top 10 things we take photos of. And it's no surprise, searches for me are very popular. I wish they'd say how popular. Probably number one, right? Number one search. Me. I love these.
People don't realize they can search for me. So it's one of those tips again where they're trying to let you know they can.
Yeah, oh, that's so cool.
I'm doing it right now.
I am too. what I usually will do is I will search for... Oh, I can't get to the search box. This happens to me. Oh, there we go. What I will usually do is just click my face, but what if I just search for me? Let's see if it knows. No, it doesn't. It's confused. By the way, my favorite picture of all time.
There we are.
And Google made an animated GIF of that, actually, which I have on my... if you go to leoville.com, it's one of my front page photos. That's interesting. Me did not work with me. Me gave me a very random...
You just have a poor self-image.
The time hop feature of Google Photos is
loving
really, really great.
That.
Yeah, it's so much better than mm-hmm. I mean, I love TimeHop, the product TimeHop, and ThinkUp does a similar thing. But what I love about the Google Photos one is that it's photos that I didn't necessarily share, so it's really comprehensive.
You know,
there's always something.
They recover this day. So this day in 2014, ooh, love that.
Persimmons.
I don't.
Good day.
For some reason took a picture of persimmons and shaved in the studio. Probably a Harry's commercial. Yeah, I love Google Photos. That's an amazing thing. And with unlimited free storage, why I just don't know why everybody doesn't use it. So awesome. Yeah, this day is, yeah, it's like Time Hop, isn't it? Yeah. Which I love also. We don't know what the monthly active users of Google Plus are. A year ago when Recode asked David Bespris about it, he said, I don't want to talk about numbers.
Oh, that's a good way to not answer the question.
Okay.
If they wanted us to know, we would know.
We were talking about that yesterday on Mac Break Weekly. Why? Because Tim Cook gave out some numbers about Apple Music and stuff. Why give out any numbers at all? Why not just shut up? Cook won't say how many watches they've sold, he said, because that would be that's competitive information that our competitors could use. I don't know how they would use it except to know whether to stay in out of the business or
say
it's always a signal to me that they're not the number isn't quite.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Or you're saving the number,
which is why you should say nothing ever, because even when you don't say something, that's saying something. Google. Okay, this is a good one. Thank you from Burke McQuinn for this one. Apparently, as you know, we were mentioning today is Back to the Future Day, and a tweet from the main Google account about 15 new Gmail themes actually has a accidental link to a confidential PDF. Do not share outside of Google. Project Flux. With Project Flux, our goal is to give everyone the ability to explore any place and any time, no matter where or when they are. I love it. Our mission, to make the world's information universally accessible and useful. But here's chrono compression, time circuits, and power. 1.21 times 10 to the 9th watts. Or 1.21 gigawatts. And it will launch at the speed of 141.62 kilometers per hour, a.k.a. 88 miles an hour. This is so good.
Nice.
This is so chrono compression device. Why, that looks like a flux chronometer. Early tests locations. Courthouse Square. Blue's Diner, South Pasadena, New Peabody Ranch. Hill Valley, California.
Did you see the USA Today logo today?
No.
Basically, in Back to the Future, you know, there's an edition of USA Today.
Right.
That's, you know, Cubs win the series. So they actually changed the logo to look like
that one. That's funny.
That's a good touch.
That's funny. Yeah, yeah, USA Today
that's
is
what
featured.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Back in the 80s.
At this point, it doesn't unfortunately look like the Cubs are going to win the series. I'm sorry to say. That's so funny. Special delivery, 15 new Gmail themes to make your inbox more awesome. And then if you click the link, what do you get?
But what did come true is the sneakers.
Self-tying sneakers? We have those?
Yes, we do. It's on the rundown.
Come on.
The last one on the rundown.
All right.
What?
I have a flux capacitor on my wrist. Next Android Wear. Nike is going to sell them next year. Self-lacing
sneakers.
Guess
who has the first pair?
Michael J. Fox.
That's great. Yeah.
That's nice. Mm-hmm. You know, I actually tried to watch Back to the Future 2 last night. God, is that a terrible movie? It's free right now on Amazon streaming, all three of them. It is the worst movie. Hey, this is good. I need this. This fat men like me need this.
Travel. Sorry, Doc.
Nor have we figured out how to.
And I like the vertical video, too, Nike. Nicely done.
I think it's Michael J. Fox's.
Oh, did he shoot it?
Yeah. Yeah.
There's an animated GIF of them
lacing up. That's cool.
And the note there from the designer to him.
Oh, that's great.
Nike designer.
Oh, that's really cool.
How do they do it?
There's the GIF. That could be just animated.
How does it work?
I don't know.
It's pretty cool, though.
Nice move on Google's part. A little competitive action here. After, if you are a customer of Microsoft or IBM's apps subscription, you can get Google apps for free as long as you're still under contract.
Hard to compete with free.
But you have to be paying. You have to have an enterprise agreement with another provider. And I don't know what happens. I guess once that enterprise agreement expires, then you have to start paying for your Google apps.
Well, and especially if you're looking to transition and you want to try things out, it seems like it's a pretty good idea.
Yeah, it's a great idea.
You know, try it out with no risk whatsoever. And then if you've still got a one-year contract you can't get out of, that's fine. You know, just pick us up whenever you can, kind of thing.
We talked about this on Windows Weekly. Yahoo is abandoning Bing. They announced this at their quarterly results call. They have reached a deal with Google for search. This is, it actually was a regulatory
back
filing.
Back to the future.
Back to the future. Yahoo and Google have agreed to certain procedures with the antitrust division of the USDOJ. This, of course, because in the past, Yahoo and Google's attempts to share searching were investigated by the DOJ in 2008. Actually, it was the ad deal, I think, that caused those problems. So, Yahoo abandons Bing.
Well, I think Bing is still supposed to be 51% or more.
Oh, just
so
to,
I think
just for the antitrust
maybe
reasons.
Yahoo can use up to 49%. Ah. Yeah. So whatever deal they signed, you know, 10 years ago or something, Carol Bartz did at Yahoo,
right.
You know, it seems like they did a very strong contract back
right.
then.
Right. Speaking of interesting Google stats, Google unveiled a shopping insights tool that gives us some interesting information about how people are using Google search and Google shopping and so forth. It's a part of a long-term effort to help retailers get deeper insights about users' intent and context. Is this where the number came from? Oh, no, this is where the number came from. 50% of people do zero searches per day on mobile. What's wrong with you, you people?
So, Leo, this goes back to where you say people should never give numbers because I remember for a long time Google said we have over 10,000 computers, and we said that almost up into 2005 when we had many, many, many more than 10,000 computers. Well, this person is doing the math, but they're using a number that we gave, you know, in 2012 or something like that about how many searches are a day or how many searches are a month. And so they just apply that directly. And then they say, oh, there's this many active Android devices, do a little division and here's how many. But, you know,
not real.
Google tends to say we do over this many searches and we don't update those numbers that often because they come back and bite you. So
the math, 50 billion divided by 1.8 billion times 30, blah, blah, blah. This is, in other words, this is a stupid article, which I want to ignore.
Well, it was a smart idea to try to take, you know, bragging about active Android users versus number of searches, but it's limited by how much information, you know, has been made public, I think. So.
Okay. I just imagine those Google folks laughing at us again. Google Maps now lets you add a stop along your route to check gas and what? and check.
I've been waiting for that for ages. You also want to be able to say, find the nearest Starbucks on the route.
Ah, that's what I want. Yes.
I don't know if this, does that exactly, because it could be there's one only 2 miles from you, but it's off the interstate.
So you're in navigation mode, and you can search for Starbucks, and then you can add them as a detour on the way to your final destination.
Right. Multiple stop.
Nice.
Super useful.
So it'll remember your final destination, too, so it doesn't break your initial intention.
And did we get the new Waze app yet? Have you gotten it?
I haven't. No, and I buy it for you. I'm a believer of believers.
You're the Waze guy. Apparently, the big redesign for the Waze app supposedly came out yesterday. Let me see if I got the update. I don't think I did.
Speaking of updates.
Yes.
How long does it take to do an update of Android?
Marshmallow. We want Marshmallow. You're on a Nexus 6, right?
Yeah.
I'm on a Nexus 6, too.
And a Nexus
7. You still haven't gotten it. No. Seriously. Wow.
Why, have you?
Oh, that was a humble brag, Jason.
Well, no. I'm surprised.
He installed it. No, he installed it manually.
But I've gotten it over the air to most of my other devices at this
point. You have?
Yeah.
Oh, Jason, that was below you.
Sorry. I didn't mean for it to sound that way.
You sound like
Alex
Trebek.
I'm authentically surprised.
Oh, you think the Middle Ages were in the 12th century, eh? Oh.
I didn't mean it as a humble brag. I was authentically surprised.
You didn't get Marshmallow.
I thought for sure that sixes had all gotten it, but...
What's wrong with you? Exactly. Yeah.
I love all of you guys, okay? Let's just get that out on the table right now.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Are you connected to the internet?
This is an unlocked Google Fi Nexus 6. I don't know what would be holding me back here, but I press that update button all the time. I am really grateful that they're doing monthly. Your system's up to date. Thanks. I am really glad they're doing those monthly patches, because that's very good.
But I what it patched mine. I got all happy. Ooh,
yeah,
I got Marshmallow.
No.
I kept trying. I tried to do it now on tap like five times before I realized it was 5.11.
Yeah,
felt like an idiot.
It's the new monthly security upgrades, which is great.
Yeah,
but not. But it does kind of set you up, doesn't it? You have to look at the size.
Yeah,
if it's 12 megabytes, it's not Marshmallow.
Yeah, no good. That's the patch.
Well, then I guess I can't. I can't tell if I've got the new Waze or not. It's much more colorful. The icons look better. The maps are more colorful. Yeah, I don't think I have this, but it's still kind of Waze-y.
Which I want. I like Waze.
You want to stay? You want to stay like Waze?
Yeah. I'm so used to it. I like it better than Google Maps.
Yeah. Well, it's the crowdsourcing.
Some things that are really nice, but I'm so dependent upon it. Yeah. It is my the light at the end of my tunnel. It is my North Star. Mm. And what I hate is I hate night mode on both of them.
Yeah, you like the white
and
maps,
and I have to search to try to find where
they don't use. You probably don't use the satellite view either, huh?
No.
Never. Oh, it's iOS only at the moment. It's iOS only. It's not for Android people. Now I understand.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
Now I understand. Waze 4.0. It'll be in Android soon.
Yeah, as soon as I get Marshmallow.
Yeah, it's on the iTunes store now, but Android later. By the way, that's the first time they've changed the app since they acquired Waze all these years ago.
They really left alone. I talked to some Waze people about trying to do something with them, and they just emphasized again and again, we're still a startup. We're not like Google. We're a little startup.
Aren't they getting sued by somebody who claims that they stole some of their map information? I think that happened before. It was before the Google. I think it was even before Waze launched. Waze is being sued by Phantom Alert. It was filed in San Francisco federal court last month, saying that they used proprietary data from Phantom Alert without permissions. Both apps share road, red light, and traffic information. And the way they found out is the way map makers always find out. Waze was using the same fictitious location information that his company had used in Phantom Alert for just that reason. We'll see what happens. Suit seeks monetary damages and an injunction against Waze and Google. I don't know where that stands. That was a month ago, and I haven't heard anything since. A couple of little things. Oh, I know you'll want to talk about this, actually. A couple of things you want to talk about. Jeff, you'll want to talk about the fact that the New York Times this Sunday will come with cardboard.
Well, is it this Sunday or soon? I think it's not this Sunday.
Oh, it's not this Sunday? November 7th. Sorry, November 7th.
Well, close enough. Right, and I think this is wonderful, and it's amazing, and I said so. I have one copy editor-like quibble, though.
Virtual, the news is not virtual.
Well, it's virtual reality means that it is a fake reality.
Right.
This is I emailed the PR people at the Times to say, is this animated or is this immersive video? It's immersive video.
So it's really
– there's immersive photography. There's immersive video. There's VR and there's AR. They're all being lumped together as VR. And maybe a losing battle. People are saying, oh, give up. It's a losing battle. But it's still early in the life of the technology. And when it comes to journalism, I think it matters. Is this a made-up animated scene or was this a scene that you shot according to journalistic standards? In which case, it's immersive video. It's not VR.
The New York Times magazine, it says, will release a new virtual reality film called The Displaced. But what you would say is a new 360-degree video or a new
I just think just to say once in the press release that it's immersive video, and then I understand that people are saying, well, Google is a VR headset and it's VR technology, and okay, I'll let that go. And I'm not complaining about the time so much. I mean, I got smashed. People just, you know, give up, Jarvis. So I know I'm being...
No, I agree with you. Virtual reality is the wrong phrase to use when you're talking about something that's real.
The other issue is when it comes to investment, VR to me is the last thing that's going to come because it's the hardest. Right? Immersive photography, immersive video. Immersive photography is fairly easy. You can do that now. Immersive video with the jump and all that, that comes next. AR comes next in ease, taking an image and augmenting it. VR is really expensive and really hard, and I think that...
I agree. This is not VR, is it? It's immersive video. No, VR implies what? That you can walk around in it, that you can experience
it. It's virtual. It's made up.
Right.
It's...
But even more than that, I understand you now, because at first I thought you meant, oh, it's not made up, it's real. But it is also not VR in the sense that you can manipulate objects, you can move around in it.
Right.
You can only passively consume it. It's the difference is you can look around. That's all. It's immersive.
Which is cool and amazing. And,
absolutely.
And one of our professors at CUNY is starting to work on this. And I think it's all great. I'm not trying to nitpick the work at all. Just the language.
No, I think you're exactly right. In fact, this misrepresents really what you're getting. You're getting an immersive video of children being who are uprooted by war. More than a million cardboard VR viewers will arrive in the Sunday paper on November 7th. I'll get one. I'll bring it in. Of course, what they kind of neglect to mention is you have to have a compatible phone.
Yeah.
Which means a high-end
iOS.
iOS or Android, but it has to be a high-end phone. It's not...
Basically, anybody who – I mean, I can't see my – not that my parents get the New York Times because they think it's evil, but I can't see, you know, people who have –
What do your parents get? Grit?
Yeah, your parents get the New York Times is evil.
We get grit and we're happy with it.
Oh, well, I get some Florida newspapers.
That's funny.
my poor father thought – he always thought – when you grow up, you're going to vote Republican.
Boy, you know, the irony of this is it's maybe Republicans that are starting to believe the New York Times and Democrats who think the New York Times is evil. They pretty much created the email gate issue, right?
Exactamundo. And just for that one line, Leo, you're going to get about, 4,000 emails and nasty tweets.
Oh, I don't care.
You shouldn't talk about politics. You should just stick to what you know.
You're ignorant.
I'm going to stop watching. You said something about politics. You know what, people? Those of you who say it, fine.
You know, it always makes me laugh because what it comes down to is I don't know anything about politics because I don't agree with them.
Exactly. Drives me nuts.
And anybody who knew anything would obviously agree with them. So we now have a Magic Leap demo, and I am so excited. Ooh. And Matt Cutts, I know what division you should be working in when you go back to work.
Oh, that looks like fun, doesn't it?
Oh, so the Google owns this technology. One. This is shot through the Magic Leap. It says no special effects or compositing were used in the creation of these videos. Magic Leap is a augmented reality system that lets you impose digital artifacts onto real life. So we're in a real office, and there seems to be a spaceship floating under that desk. Or maybe a solar system floating over the desk.
Neil deGrasse Tyson kind of moment.
Cool.
But now I think it's a technology that Google invested in, but I don't think it's
Google-owned. Okay.
Yeah, right. I think they invested like $500 million or something. But
yeah. Yes, no, important clarification. It's an independent company.
That's an impressive video.
Yeah. Pretty cool.
Maybe I'm being dumb. How are no special effects being used in this video? I don't understand what's going on. Are they just overlaying?
You're looking through the...
Their technology.
Actually, Magic Leap doesn't require a visor, right? What do you... What?
I don't know.
We'll find out.
I hope it's good.
I don't know.
I think, Gina, when the alien was underneath the table leg could go in front of it, and it had a sense of where it was. And that's the big, I think. Okay. I don't know, but I think that's what's the big
Magic thing. Leap is a computing platform, an augmented reality startup that where the real world is your screen. Now, of course, what we've seen before with augmented reality is you have to be looking through a visor.
Okay.
Or so. Oh, my God. Look at this. This is on the website.
Whoa.
So these people are not looking through a visor. Those children were looking straight at. So is it a projection technology? I think it is. I think it projects it into your eyes.
But there has to be something you wear or.
No,
some
they're not
sort
wearing
of
anything. Look at. They are not wearing anything.
Yeah, but those could all be actors, and maybe what you're supposed to be experiencing is, you know, what the camera is seeing, is my guess.
I'd still go to work for them if I were you.
So, augmented reality is supposed to be harder than virtual reality because then you have to register it with the real world.
Right. You have to know where stuff is.
Yeah. Having the alien go behind the table is... Is hard.
In
that
case, you're right. But you could also augment the real world with just data about that scene. And that is also augmented reality.
Just an overlay.
None of these shots, which are obviously staged, but in none of these shots are people wearing anything. So,
yeah. That's the last thing you want to use.
So
I
used to do a bunch of virtual reality stuff back in grad school, and they would usually use the camera looking through the head mounted display or whatever.
Right.
So that's probably what's happening here. But if it can register that well with the real world, that's pretty impressive.
Cardboard, the Mattel cardboard does that, where it puts stuff on that disc, and it uses a special disc to make the background like a screen. I want to know how you do it.
Really cool videos on the site.
Yeah, it's cool.
I think you should have a little elephant on your shoulder, Leo.
I would totally do that. I would totally do that.
You could
have
the good elephant on one shoulder and the bad elephant on the other.
I want to know how this works.
Press it. Yeah, when you want to
really,
search for
I don't
history.
Think these are actors. Remember? These are kids who are being surprised by whatever it is. Just
but this is video. No, Leo, it only works on video. It doesn't work in the real world.
No, look at these children. What are they looking at?
Really?
Look at them.
They all react.
I suspect someone is telling those kids to all act like a whale came out of the floor.
Oh, you guys are so cynical.
Free candy for cynic. You all.
And I am such a gullible. I'm so gullible. Look at the kids on the other side.
Or maybe they're actually sitting at SeaWorld and they just overlaid the basketball court.
Oh, maybe that's it. Maybe in fact there's a whale. It's just
Gina's got it. Oh. Whoa. What?
What are you talking about? What?
Oh dear. You have a Magic Leap right
well
with you.
Done.
That was good.
Listen,
hide that.
Well played.
The illusion is broken.
The illusion is ruined. saved yourself $500 million.
Who needs a magic leap?
We've got
a bonus if you get it to poop, Jason.
I think that...
Listen, we don't need magic leap. We've got TriCaster.
So I feel that they are not using any technology. I think this is just happening.
Okay, Google, what is Magic Leap?
How does Magic Leap work? How does Magic Leap? Maybe they don't want you to know. Apparently others have typed this in. Here's a patented... Oh, the patent has a wearable display.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You never get a pony.
There's never a pony when you expect one.
Where are my eyeball implants?
But yeah, I mean, I think it's important, though, that you mentioned that how hard this is to do, Matt, because
yeah, you're right.
You have to map the real world. You can, an immersive
and
movie.
And interact
is,
with it.
Right. Oh, wait a minute, though. They did work on glasses-free 3D displays.
And you got to give props to HoloLens, because if they basically took a Kinect and hooked it up to, you know, some glasses, and then you get a 3D model that's good enough that you can do the occlusion and the registration. And that's pretty impressive right there. So props to Microsoft. By the way, have you seen the video where people swap facial expressions?
No. Should we try it here?
Oh, yeah. If you search for, I think it's SIGGRAPH swap video expressions or something like that.
This
okay.
This
so
is...
they basically, yes, that's the video.
Real-time expression transfer for facial reenactment.
Okay, so now what are you looking at? You're looking at two people that have video that are coming from two different Kinects. And what's kind of strange is you look at the video on the left of the person, and then you look at what he's actually doing, and he's not doing anything but moving back and forth, but it's applying the facial expressions from the guy with the black shirt to the video on the left.
This is what I was afraid
of. And so you can, virtual actors. You're literally pasting expressions on top of someone else.
So
and
I
making them look pretty realistic.
Video's mouth.
So the guy in the hoodie is just sitting there doing nothing. And she's making him emote and talk and
And so it actually does a mesh and it recognizes where the faces are and then it'll warp that face to match the expression that it extracts from
looks
the other
pretty
person.
Good too.
And add teeth when teeth aren't there, which is interesting.
Yes. Wow. That's right. That's right.
It's like a
and so at first you're like, what program? Is no big deal? And then you realize what's happening and you're like, oh, this is crazy.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Eyes going, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's wacky.
Welcome to the future.
We're going to be in a very weird world in about 5 years, I think. There is nothing that's going to happen that anything. You won't know when you see something if it's real or not.
Yep. That's right. That's exactly right.
Oh, man.
Who's to say what's real is real?
Oh, boy.
Whoa, dude.
Just think, Dave, you could do a completely scripted episode of Twig. You just scan our faces, feed us our lines, and we'll just, you know,
you could just
let the show
react,
go. We
relax.
Can go out and get a drink.
Much easier.
I'd like to have you all say Leistungsschutzrecht.
Hey, how was, so you weren't here last week, Jeff, because you were interviewing Neil deGrasse Tyson. How did that go? Was that fun?
It was great. It was great. It was. I hate being away, and I started the whole session saying, "This is so good. It means I'm away from my beloved Twig podcast."
Aww.
But he's. We gave Neil the Knight Innovation Award, and then he and I had an hour long discussion, last minutes with the room. But it was just amazing.
What
I mean, he's such a showman. He's just amazing. And on the video, the still on the video is him getting me about something.
It looks like he leapt to his feet. I mean, like, was he up and walking around?
No, he wasn't. I went around the room with the microphone, which is what I do.
Okay.
But you know, he talked about journalism, what's wrong with journalism, what's wrong with journalists doing things. And he's just so – the whole video is up online, folks. And he's just amazing. He's just a showman. And the poor guy afterwards, we had a reception and then a dinner, and he couldn't move a foot an hour. Yeah. Because of all the people coming around, obviously wanting selfies, but also wanting to argue about God and the universe, and he just never turns it off in his generosity with people. And his view is that if people are coming after him, that's because he says it's not me, it's science.
Yes,
he says they're excited about science, and that's what I like. That's what I'm trying to do.
Good for him. That's exhausting. And he's just, wow, that's awesome.
Really cool, Jeff.
So it was a real honor.
Good. Well, we got to watch that. Everybody got to watch it. I always, we see stories in the paper, and I always want to ask Jeff about it. Like this Amazon response to the New York Times, and then the New York Times executive editor's response to Amazon. And
then Amazon in turn responds to him.
So I'm glad they're having a dialogue, but
such a weird world where Amazon and the New York Times are arguing on Medium. Like,
yeah.
How did this happen? Like, when does the New York Times start publishing on Medium and Amazon? It was so crazy. I was joking around with Kevin Purdy. I was saying, the real winner here was clearly Medium.
Yeah,
that's true.
I'm straight.
Yeah. So I guess the Amazon said that one of the named sources in the New York Times article. Remember the article in the New York Times said everybody was crying at their desk at Amazon, and it was a horrible corporate culture. And of course, Jeff Bezos denied it. And now this story from Jay Carney saying that what the New York Times didn't tell you is that one of the named sources was fired from Amazon after attempting to defraud vendors and concealing it.
Which does tend to throw that ex-employee under the bus pretty severely.
But. Yeah, and that the Times hadn't really given the Amazon folks a chance to respond. Right. They didn't check with them.
This way is funny. It's actually something that Neil Tyson brought up. He said, I got interviewed by a big magazine, and they got it wrong, and why didn't they show me what they wrote? Well,
right.
and our answer in journalism is, because that would enable prior restraint. We don't do that.
Right.
But then, do you care about the facts? And so Carney, a former White House spokesperson, Carney's complaint about Amazon here, about the New York Times here, is that we made people available. You could have come to us and asked, what about this source? Is this source credible? And we would have told you that something was rotten in Denmark. But you didn't do that. And then the Times response is, well, we talked to 100 people, so it all averages out. If this one egg is bad, we still have the right story. And no, says Amazon, you're relying on people and structures to make conclusions that you shouldn't be doing. And there is kind of a scientific model question there, is how many anecdotes does it take to come up with the truth? So when the Times story came out, I was critical of it because I thought that it was a bit overblown for what it was. And I also think, I haven't written this. I'm curious what you think about this. I haven't written this, but I think that becoming primarily dependent on consumer revenue leads to the desire to show off for your consumers. Now, in a tabloid, that's called sensationalism. I'm not accusing the Times of that, but the Times, it strikes me, has been trying to do more "wowie, look what you're getting for your money" kind of stuff lately. We went after Hillary Clinton. We went after Amazon. Aren't we big? And in both cases, I think their standards of what counted for the full story don't hold up as well as they would like to think. That's what I have to say.
Interesting.
Trouble in paradise for Tesla. First Consumer Reports yanks their recommendation, saying in our annual survey of car owners, a lot of Tesla owners were complaining of defects and problems with their vehicles. Uniformly, Tesla owners said the service was great, but there were problems, especially with early Teslas.
Not surprising.
Yeah.
Consumer Reports went from the best car ever made to we don't recommend it.
Yeah.
A little binary.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, on the one hand, I'm just so friggin' amazed that quiet to the whole world, Musk came up with a self-driving car and put it out in the market. Yeah. On the other hand,
it does seem to be
ready for it?
Taking exits not. They're talking about the road not taken. This is a video of the autonomous Tesla driving down the road and without instruction taking a highway exit.
TACC, that's on over there, and the auto steer, it's on blue. That means it's on autopilot. When I turn it off, it turns gray or disappears. So I just want to see the cars coming to my left.
You got to be brave to do this.
I'm also sure I want this driver just concentrate on the video.
Yeah, pay attention. Yeah, you're on the highway here.
More cars. That looks like Jersey.
He's going 64 miles an hour. He's trucking down the highway. He's in the left-hand lane, but...
No, he's not. He's in the right-hand.
I'm sorry, right-hand. Left, right. Yes, right-hand. He's in the slow lane.
I'm gonna see what it does here. Should slow down a little bit.
The weird thing is that apparently several people have reported this happening, or it goes into the turn lanes.
Yeah, it goes off the road. At least it's following a road.
Sounds like it's taking exits, but that's very strange behavior and a little discombobulating.
Well, remember,
the discussion we've had on the show is that if a full self-driving car causes an accident, presumption is that the software maker is the one liable. Now, in this case, if you allow your car to be driven by Elon Musk, and
he didn't want to take that exit.
Yeah.
He just took an exit.
Elon knows better. He knows this is the road not taken that you should take.
Oof. Well, and Google's philosophy from watching people actually use self-driving cars has been that, you know, they rapidly start to assume the car's got everything covered, and they'll like start eating and applying, right, you know, cosmetics and stuff. And so I think that changed Google's philosophy, where they started to say, get off the highway and start thinking about how do you drive on city streets and handle right, every different set of circumstances. Right. I hope that people don't assume, oh, the Tesla's got it. I can just, you know, sort of zone out. And then next thing you know, you're down the exit ramp and heading somewhere new on an adventure. So we'll see.
What is this? You might ask. And I see a problem already with a name. This is out of beta. This is a home for people who love art, entertainment, and journalism on the web. Every member can share one link a day. Are you using this?
I did for a few days. And it's people. Nice people who started it. It's just one of those things that you get in the habit of it or not.
Yeah. That's the problem. There's too many new things. I don't need so many new things.
And there's too many things to recommend to me. I already have too much to read. I don't need more.
Yeah.
Nuzzle, I think, is a little more interesting.
I love Nuzzle.
Is the things that my friends recommend. I think Jonathan's done a great job with it. The thing about Nuzzle is I'm so active socially that a lot of what Nuzzle tells me I've already seen because I'm active socially. So it needs to put some more weird filters on it to give me a few surprises, but it's still very well done.
Yeah, I got an idea. Why don't we create a new video network? We could call it GBS that is branded content for advertisers. This is from CNN.
I've been making this sound so attractive.
Is this all ads all the time?
No, it's not. They sent me the press release. May I do a dramatic reading?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, please.
What is Great Big Story? Great Big Story is a socially distributed video network that covers real stories, great big ones. But it's not a news network. Great Big Story seeks out awesome, untold, and inspirational stories about new frontiers, the human condition, planet Earth, tastes, and flavors. I just want to puke right now.
Tastes and flavors?
Silver screen quality with mobile in mind. Our stories will intrigue and excite everywhere you watch video, from Facebook and YouTube to Apple News to Roku and Apple TV.
It doesn't have a website.
Cat videos and shouty lists. It's time to feed your feed with Great Big Stories.
So this is like Vice and BuzzFeed, where they don't have a home.
They want to think, but it's so dorky. How many Great Big Stories will you tell? Infinity times infinity.
Wow.
There's an endless supply of great big stories.
Okay, I'm pretty sure it will not be infinity times infinity, but okay.
Yeah. I really pretty sure that's not going to happen. Style guide of this place. The style guide has got to be amazing for this place. So wait, when you say that they don't have a home, that means that they don't have their own site?
Well, they have a home page, but they want to be social, which is the right way to go with distribution these days, I think. I, at Quantcast today, a BuzzFeed executive was there, and I asked at one point, I said, you know, with programmatic advertising, retargeting, what's so important is the data point about the user. Used to be that advertisers would come because they want an environment. And the BuzzFeed guy said, environment's basically dead. Forget about it.
Yeah.
And that means the website as an asset, the publication as an asset, is greatly devalued. So what CNN's trying to do, which I applaud, is to come up with a way to do the no network network, the distributed video that goes everywhere, to finally figure it out how to take advantage of that. But Jesus, they're trying to be for millennials. You can just see the boardroom meeting. I think the kids will like that, don't you? Yeah, those kids go for that kind of stuff. Let's give them more of that. That's what the kids like.
Tim Cook said he was trying to explain to a nephew what a channel was, and he says, why does anything even have a channel? What is a channel? What does it mean even to be a channel anymore? Channel 9, Channel 4, TBS, CBS. What does that even mean? And I guess that's true. And this
means
it's kind of
aggregation. Yep.
Yeah.
But aren't mobile apps channels?
Yeah.
Like native mobile apps are still these like segmented like places that you go to get content, though. You know, like this is the weird.
Well,
like,
I think that the idea is you go to Facebook. And you get a variety of content.
Yeah, but BuzzFeed says we don't care if you ever come to BuzzFeed. We're gonna encounter you, and you're gonna encounter us wherever.
And Twitter and Facebook. Right. And
the other thing that
Plus and,
the other thing that I've been trying to think through with BuzzFeed that was a guy named Digby said that was I think really really right. When we talked about VidCon, when I was at VidCon, how video becomes social tokens. When I share something with you, it says something about me and you and our relationship. That's what BuzzFeed enables. Right, so the sharing isn't saying you should read this list of 27 cats. The sharing is BuzzFeed enabling and feeding and fueling the conversation. That's what BuzzFeed's about, and that's what you know, things like the CNN venture don't figure out. We'll have great stories because you must like stories because that's what we do is stories. So we'll give you more stories, but just cooler and stupider and shorter because we think you're cool and stupid and short.
Probably right.
Unlike BuzzFeed, that when you share the list of 27 cats, what you're actually saying is, I salute your cat love.
Yes. I salute
and I like it as a person.
Your cat love.
Yes.
And by the way, odd numbers do better than even numbers, he said.
What? Odd numbers
and listicles?
Because I said, yeah. He said 26 cats. I said, isn't it usually 27? And we said, well, sometimes it's 28, but odd does very well.
Oh, they're overthinking it.
I knew I got something wrong at Lifehacker. We always did a top 10.
Should be a top 11.
As you get older like us, Gina, you're lucky to be able to get a top 9.
All right, let's ring my chimes here. I got the Ring Video Doorbell, our sponsor today. I love this. I installed it myself on our home, and I just think this is so cool. Think of it as kind of like caller ID for your house. You'll be able to install it. I'm not a handyman. But they give you everything you need. The doorbell itself, right here, which has a built-in HD video camera, plus a microphone and a speaker. So you put this in, I just unscrewed my old doorbell, had two wires coming out of the door jamb, mounted this plate there, put the wires on the plate. It's very simple. Anybody could do this. It comes with a level, the appropriate screwdrivers and drill bits and all, everything you need. By the way, this is a battery-powered doorbell as well, so you don't have to have those two wires. If you do, all the better, but you can charge it up once a year, and it'll work on any surface. Now, if it's a wired doorbell, it's going to ring your doorbell at home, but what it's also going to do is attach to your Wi-Fi and then ring your doorbell wherever you are. In fact, not just ring your doorbell, it actually has motion detection too. So when my doorbell rings, I can answer the doorbell. I could say, hi, I'm not here right now. Could you leave the box? Or if you're worried that it's a bad guy, this is actually my front door. And it's actually the cleaning lady just got there. So she's going to go in. But that's good because I know now when I see the doorbell ring or somebody moving outside, I know who it is and I can talk to him even if I want. One of the advantages of this is burglaries tend to occur during the daytime, about 95% of them while you're at work. And in almost every case, the bad guy rings the doorbell first to make sure you're not home. Well, even if you're at work, you can say, hey, yeah, I'm here. What is it? Oh, I'm in the shower right now. I'll be right out. And they're going to leave. They're going to go away. And if they don't, you also have video of them anyway. And in fact, people have in L.A., there was an arrest based on the video doorbell picture of a bad guy coming in the door. Oh, look, there's Lisa picking up her mail there. Giant box coming in the door. I love it. I could tell when my daughter gets home late at night. I can see who's at my door. I can even see who's in the vicinity. And it's so easy to install. You're going to love it. Ring.com/twig for more information. You'll never miss a visitor. You'll never miss a package. It actually rings all of your devices, including your tablets, your phones, your smartwatch. I know when there's somebody at my door, and I just love it. Emotion alert. You can talk to them. They even have a Ring chime. So if you don't have a wired doorbell, you plug in the Ring chime into your plug socket, and boom, it'll automatically ring, and you'll know somebody's at your door. I never miss a call again because everything in the house goes off all at once. You're going to love it. We've got a special deal for you if you go to ring.com/twig. Free FedEx shipping, because I know you want it as soon as possible. It comes in four different colors to match your decor. It's got two configurable speakers that sound great. It's got an LED, so you can it'll talk to you, tell you what's going on when you're setting it up. A microphone, motion detection, HD camera. You're going to love it. Ring.com/twig. I am so glad I installed a Ring on my house, and I encourage you to do the same. It just gives you kind of some peace of mind. Get free FedEx shipping when you go to ring.com/twig. Think of it as caller ID for your house. Well, Gina's here. Jeff's here. I'm here. Matt's here. I guess we could go back to the old ways and do a tip of the week if you have one, Gina.
I had this really cool site that I found through MakerBase. It's kind of an art project, but you got to look at this. It's kind of amazing. Cameron'sWorld.net.
Cameron's World.
This designer named Cameron Askin pulled up a bunch of GeoCities pages, archived GeoCities pages, and designed this amazing homage to like an earlier time on the web with amazing imagery and sounds. And you just scroll through it, and it's just a whole nother era on the web. I don't know if you can get audio on that, but
yeah.
Some of the things I for you to see exclamation.
And just scroll, just keep scrolling.
Those were the days.
Yep.
Oh my goodness.
And I mean, he designed these sections with all these different.
Hello,
I mean, really,
ladies.
It's an amazing piece of art.
Let me tell you about my hobbies. I like to play chess and chat with ladies on the internet. Hello, ladies. Wow.
Yeah,
these are all from real websites.
Yes. He excavated the buried neighborhoods of archived GeoCities pages from 1994 to 2009 and put together this just amazing experience.
That's incredible.
And if you have some time, click around. Try different things, play different clips. It's incredible and so deep and just beautiful.
Wow. He's drooling in an asylum somewhere now after making this. Yeah. Jeez, that would drive me nuts.
Wow. Some of these are amazing. it just keeps going.
This is how it used to be, kids.
This is how it used to be. I mean, but none of the pages were as well put together as this. Yeah, there's like a browser inside the browser. Is that Mosaic?
Catscape Navigator, it says. TV show do you watch? The Simpsons. Who'd think that they were still on? Get out, I warned you. This is so funny. Oh, yeah. I bet it is deep because I bet you there's you click these links.
Yep.
You know,
and it
upgrades.
Opens up the simulated
Catscape
browser.
Is the most advanced browser available. Meow. Welcome to Shadows page. Wow. The first kitty. Wow.
Yeah. Anyway, I know this is kind of wacky, but I killed some time on this page.
Have you seen, there's still pages like this. Have you ever been to Ling's Cars?
Yeah. Oh, no, I haven't. Look at the under construction section. That's amazing.
This is a modern web page by a Chinese woman in England who who is selling cars. I've been trying to get her on triangulation. She says, I'm very busy right now. But this is the funniest. And this is real. This is current. This is her business.
I like the retro aesthetic when it's done.
I love it.
Well, yes.
And she knows what she's doing. It's tongue in cheek. She says there's a lecture by her online. It says it's all crap JavaScript. It's quite. This reminds me of Cameron's world a little bit, except it's real. Wow. It's real. This is real, folks. This is modern. I'm really trying to get her on triangulation. I don't know. I don't know what it would be like. But,
That'd be amazing.
So there's two crap websites just for you.
There you go.
Endless scrolling. I launch a nuclear rocket into the UK car leasing industry. You can trust me. I'm Ling.
Oh, great.
Isn't that great? I like Cameron's world too. We're gonna save both of those, bookmark them for some time when you have some free time.
Oofa.
And Zombo.com is still around, by the way.
Have you seen Zombo.co?
No.
It's the Web 2.0 version of Zombo.
Oh, wait a minute.
Or not Web 2.0.
And so, here's the video from the original.
Oh. But it's the makeover because, you know.
Our, it's responsive, multi-purpose.
Yeah, so funny.
Oh. 20 years from now, they'll look back at us and they'll be like, oh, that looks so dated.
Oh.
It's true. It's really true.
Oh, this is with Series A funding from Andreessen Horowitz.
Welcome to ZomboCon.
Zombo 2.0. This is great.
I'm glad I could contribute to the list of terrible websites.
All the bad clip art you'd ever want. That's great. That's so great. Matt, you got something for us?
Sure. Yeah. If you're on the other end of the spectrum from the GeoCity side and you're trying to make more of the Zombo.co side, there's a site called LibraStock.com. And the idea behind it is that it searches something like 30 different free sources of pictures. And so you can go to LibraStock.com. Now, I can't vouch for this site. I saw it on Hacker News like a week ago and was searching and it seems to have some pretty good stuff. So you can search for tree or money or blog or whatever. And it'll have little hashtags that you can click on to do searches for those terms.
But
as I understand it, yeah, these pictures are free for you to use for your blog, you know.
Are they Creative Commons or?
I believe
so. Do whatever you want, it says.
I haven't dug all the way down, but it seems like all the ones I've searched on, they say that they're free to use.
Nice. And you get, so some of this is based on stock photo sites where they give you free images and you can get those. Oh, this is great.
It's almost very like useful. A meta search on top.
Yeah.
Yeah, very nice.
Nice. It's called Libra, LIBRE, stock at LibraStock.com. Jeff Jarvis, your number of the week.
So you might think that Facebook is and the whole internet and everything on the net is just jammed with advertising, but Marketingland quoted a study from Social Bakers. I haven't heard of them. They calculated that only 3% of news feeds is ads on Facebook.
Wow!
Now compare that to most any magazine you get. That's going to run anywhere from 30% to 50% advertising.
Radio is 19 minutes an hour. Network television is 16 minutes an hour, 25%. Right. So that's 3% is nothing.
It's nothing. It's nothing. Oh, no, I got to give you one more number today from Digby, and I'm suddenly forgetting Digby's last name. From BuzzFeed. He said that they had calculated at BuzzFeed that people scroll 8.5 feet a day. As tall as the tallest man.
Oh, my God. 8.5 feet a day of scrolling. That even seems low, doesn't it?
It does, kind of, yeah.
Seems like I've scrolled many more miles than that.
And miles more to scroll before you
miles
sleep,
before
Leo.
I sleep.
Miles more to scroll before you sleep.
Oh, it's so fun to have the old gang back together. This is a classic episode. Oh.
It was great. Really great.
Someday, Gina, you will come back to us, right?
I will always come back anytime.
Every month, come back.
Every month, for sure.
Gina Trapani is, of course, on Google Plus, and you can find her at thinkup.com, and her latest is MakerBase. That's erba.se. If you're a maker or you know someone who is a maker, add them to the maker database. It's yes, free please. And everybody must contribute.
I have a little thing to promote. I'm doing an Ask Me Anything on Product Hunt tomorrow.
Oh yes, that's
Product
right.
Hunt has that new live mm-hmm. where they do AMAs with different people and yep. and I think and I don't know if I'm supposed to share this, but I actually think it's going to be video. So it's going to be a full hour. Oh. Of me asking, answering questions. I get tons of questions from listeners and viewers, and I try to, just throughout the week and the day and the months and stuff, and I try to answer as many as I can, but I often can't get to anything. So, can't get to everything. So, if you've got a burning question for me, come check it out. I think it's tomorrow at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 That's p.m. Right. Eastern. Yeah, there yep. you go. So, you can go to producthunt.com/live. And you can sign up there, and the video will be archived if you can't make it at that time.
Well, that's neat. I did one, but it wasn't a video, so that's great.
Ooh, yeah, I think cool. the video.
Have you done AMAs?
I'm sorry.
Have any of you done AMAs
on Reddit?
Yeah,
I've
never done a Reddit. I have not. AMA.
I've done two.
You've done two.
It's fun.
Yeah.
Highly really? Recommended. But Product Hunt is the one I did was very similar to a text-based Reddit AMA. So I'm glad to hear they're doing video now, too. That's great.
That's cool. Yeah.
And what a great lineup of people. I mean, they're doing a great job. And every day there's another one, sometimes several a day.
Yeah, this sounds great.
I like taking the form and advancing it like this. That's what's cool.
Yeah. Very nice. So everybody should just go to producthunt.com/live and you can sign up to talk with Gina tomorrow, 11 a.m. Pacific.
Yeah.
Matt Cutts, what are you up to these days?
Oh, same old, but I will mention, the Google Webmaster Blog, always a good place for questions about 301s, 302s, HTTPS, keywords, crawling JavaScript, all that sort of stuff. Google Webmaster Blog is a good spot to go because even though I've been sort of on sabbatical, on leave, the people there are still fighting spam and talking about how they're tackling hacked sites and all sorts of great stuff. So,
they deprecated the AJAX crawling scheme. We talked about that last week with Barry Schwartz.
They finally are getting smart enough. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's good. Details there. That's the kind of thing they talk about. How spam is tackled, things like that.
They just rolled out a really good change to tackle hacked sites. So,
good.
And, yep, all sorts of good stuff on that blog.
What's your 30-day challenge this month?
I was going to eat mindfully, which I'm stuck with, and then I was going to do no mobile devices, and I have so not succeeded with that 30-day challenge.
Stick with the eating mindfully, my suggestion, yeah.
Yeah, I've ordered many more mobile devices instead, so.
Then they came out with a 6P, damn them. Yeah. It's not a good time to give up mobile, I think.
You're just mobile Matt.
Yeah.
Oh.
Matt, I love that you're so dedicated to self-improvement that Leo's just like, all right, yeah, Matt, what are you working on this month?
I know, every month.
It's good. It keeps me honest. It's nice.
And I'm living to Bobby. Listening to. Say again?
Do you do a 28-day challenge? In February, do you do a 28-day challenge?
Yeah, usually I stick with the month. It's just easier to keep track of that way. And sometimes you don't have to do it as long, and sometimes you get a day off. So,
yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Well, a week in Nebraska is kind of like a month, so I think you did it.
Oh, I might steal that if you don't mind.
Been there. Lots of corn.
It's actually very nice.
Oh, yeah.
The weather's been really nice. People have been very friendly, so I can't complain.
No, everybody's very friendly there. Thank you so much for being a part of the show, Matt. We appreciate it. You too, Gina. Always. And, of course, Jeff. Will we be talking to you? What town will you be in next Wednesday?
Berlin.
Ah, nice. I hear they have internet in Berlin these days. So
I hope so. Obviously, the hotel is the one where all of the kind of Soviet officials used to stay at Alexanderplatz.
Oh, you're in East Berlin. Completely
gutted, but I'll bet there's a few old bugs left in the walls.
Ooh, cool. Won't that be fun? We will we'll be talking to you next week, 11 a.m. I'm sorry, 1:30 p.m. Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 20:30 UTC on Wednesdays. It's This Week in Google. Thanks to our producer, Jason Howell, for putting the show together. Thanks to all of our contributors, and thanks especially to you for being here. If you want to watch live, we'd love it. But if you can't, on-demand audio and video is always available after the fact. twit.tv/twig or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Leo Laporte. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week on This Week in Google. Bye.